And welcome, friends, to this, the Thursday edition of the Grace Hour. Great to be with you on this Thursday morning edition of our broadcast, and welcome to the Grace Hour. And we want to remind our listeners that today we will be, again, continuing our theme, which is God redeeming lives. And I think if you've been listening this week, you've heard about Rahab earlier in the week, Solomon. Yesterday, we discussed the life of Ruth, a fascinating story about the redemptive power of God. And today, we'll focus on what the Bible refers to and calls the father of our faith. That would be Abraham. So stay tuned for that broadcast, friends, and stay with us if you're able to, and join us if you'd like. We will open the phone lines, give you an opportunity to share your thoughts with us. And if you would like to participate, share a thought, or ask a question, please feel free to do so. We'll give you the telephone numbers here in a moment. The toll-free number in all of North America is 800-338-7060. And locally in the greater Baltimore area, that number is 410-483-3700. And we welcome your thoughts and your questions as well on the chat. If you'd like to weigh in that way, please feel free to do so, those of you that are tuning in online. And just write us those notes, share your thoughts, ask those questions that way as well. We do want to thank you once again for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe to the show on YouTube, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, and more. My name is Pastor John Love. Joining us in the studio today is Pastor Tom Schaller. And we will take a look at the life of Abraham, a unique life, a life of faith, obviously. And his story, of course, begins in the 12th chapter of the book of Genesis, actually the 11th chapter where he is named. And we read one of the many genealogies that we find in the book of Genesis. But obviously, God was about to do something unique and something special. And we're talking about a time, perhaps a few hundred years after the flood that we read about in Genesis, the 6th, 7th, and 8th chapters. And now we are dealing with a new biblical character, one that God was going to choose and build a nation from. And that, of course, would be Abraham. And Pastor Schaller, as we begin to take a look at this unique life that God redeemed, it's fascinating to think that God would undertake this great work of creating a nation, building a nation, by separating one man unto himself, and then through that man build this nation, and would be used to reveal the great purpose of God of redemption throughout the world. It's fascinating to think about that.
Yes, it is. And even more, or along the same lines, people don't understand the Bible. And that really is just one story. Many little stories, but they connect like a thread, you know, through the whole garment. And that story is one of redemption. And many, many stories compiled. And, you know, you find your way through and see at the end of the book, in the beginning there is a garden, at the end there is a garden, there's eternity, there's a tree of life, there's a river of water, like as in the beginning in the Bible. And then you have the, you know, the wisdom of God in taking one man and building a whole nation that he carries to this day. This is 4,000 years, so. Abraham's the father of the nation, the first Jew, and from him came this great history.
Yeah, and it's amazing because most recently we have heard a lot about the Abrahamic Accords in the Middle East. Again, a coalition of nations coming together, and of course it's named after Abraham.
Yeah.
So there's such a connection between his life and everything that's still happening in the Middle East to this day.
Yeah, well, the Palestinians, they have a link to Abraham. They are, well, it's a whole study, but to think that Abraham is linked to Jewish people, Arabic people, Edomite people, Moabite people, and they recognize him for that. And So it's in the context pretty amazing.
When I think of Abraham, one of the first thoughts that comes to my mind is the fact that he believed God in Genesis 15:6, and because he believed God, righteousness was placed on his account. I mean, isn't that our story as well?
Mm-hmm.
That we mixed faith with what we heard, we believed God, and then righteousness was given to us as a gift in the same way that it was given to Abraham.
Yeah. The fact that we all, like, even though we live in the modern age, and this is ancient world, but who doesn't want to have a son? Who doesn't want to have land? Who doesn't want to have their own country or territory? Who doesn't want to know more about life? It says he looked for a city whose builder and maker is God. So this story is universal, and it's not just for the ancient world, but it is today that people have this wiring in them. They're hardwired for thinking about, where did I come from? Where am I going? What is my purpose?
Mm. It does make you wonder, because we're not told anything in the Bible about his life prior to God calling him. But perhaps he wanted to step away from all of the idolatry that existed during his time in where he lived. And maybe there was something in his heart that said,
yeah,
I want to know the living God, and,
right,
and I need to step away from a culture and the whole tide of that culture is taking me in the wrong direction.
Well, in I believe it's Joshua 24, it says that his father was an idolater, and undoubtedly Abraham was too. But like you said, it's not enough, or he didn't believe it.
Mm.
He didn't really believe that. He believed that there was something greater.
And everything changed when God called him.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't help but think that something similar happened to us, our lives.
Yeah.
The Bible makes it very clear that we are called by God, and that calling has impacted our lives in some sense and in some measure the same way it impacted Abraham's life. It's not to say that we will live the same kind of life, but it's the same kind of faith that motivates us and causes us to pursue after God.
Yeah. I mean, he rode on camels and donkeys, and what's the difference between a donkey and an automobile? We're driving automobiles, they're riding donkeys. But the conscience is the same questions about the meaning of life. And when you go to sleep at night, you're wondering, you know, wondering, is someone out there that's a lot bigger than me, that created the world and created me for him, and I'd like to know him. So God hears the cry.
And when we get to the New Testament in the book of Hebrews, and it speaks about Abraham, in verse 8 of Hebrews 11, it says, by faith Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive as an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out.
Mm.
And boy, did he go out by faith.
Yeah.
Because he went out not knowing where he went. No map, no GPS, just trusting God to lead him. That's sometimes when you think about that, that's overwhelming. And yet, you know, with its ups and downs and sometimes a roller coaster ride for Abraham, it happened.
Yeah. I mean, he came from a very civilized part of the world, the Ur, the Chaldees. The archaeologists have done studies on it. You can read about it. It wasn't like he was going from an impoverished part of the world, but actually it was well provided for food-wise. There was fresh water. There was housing. I mean, it looks like he came from, you know, very civilized, advanced for the age part of the world. But for him to leave and go where he didn't know where he was going is also something like us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. When he finally left the place called Haran, he was 75 years old. And we understand that he died at the age of 175. That's 100 years of nomadic living. That's 100 years of tent dwelling. That is just incredible when you stop and think about it. You talk about walking, living by faith. He dwelt in tents because, as you said, he looked for a city whose builder and maker was God.
Yeah.
And the question is, did he ever get there? I mean, in one sense, no, but in another sense, yes.
Mm-hmm.
All of those promises given to him have been fulfilled later in the person of Christ for us.
Right, right, right. Well, when he died, it says he went to be with his people.
Mm.
So who were his people? Because, well, we have in the Bible, we have before him, you have a Noah. You have Enoch walked with God and he was not. You have Adam and Eve. So it wasn't as if he, I think he knew he was going to go to be with people that believed, and that he was not the first one that believed. But as far as covenant goes, that he believed and he was given a covenant with God and to have land and a son, and from the son would come a great nation. So he did have promise, and maybe that's that covenant promise is and was not clear to people before him, like Adam and Eve and Abel, and you have Noah, you have Enoch, you have Noah, and so I think he was very much like us. I think that we are living here in our world, and we have that that hunger for understanding that our life is not an accident, that there is a plan, and that for us to believe God is our part. So we're believing and trusting God as he did, and wanting to inherit the promises. But what would you say about him and inheriting the promises that he didn't?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, not in a fulfilled sense of the word.
Yeah,
but he did see them, and he believed them, even though he didn't. You know, and much like Moses, he saw. You know, he was promised that God would use him to lead his people into the land, but he didn't get in there. But it was a reality.
Yeah.
And the thing that really speaks to me about his life and 100 years of tent dwelling is he lived the detached life from this world. And that's our calling.
Mm-hmm.
We've been called to live a life that's separate, detached from this world. We don't take our cues from this world. We live in a completely different manner of living. Our citizenship is in heaven. We find our people, like Abraham, when he died, he went with his people. We find our people in this life. We live with our people in this life.
Mm-hmm.
Conferences, conventions, Bible studies, church services. Why? Because we're separate. We're different.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the example of what it means to live a detached life from this world.
Yeah. Very good.
A very satisfying and fulfilling way of living, too.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he wasn't tempted or failing. So even though he wasn't worldly, as in maybe the way we would see, we see the world very much every day communicating to us, and, you know. But in Abraham's heart, he had a sin nature. He understood, you know, there were fears and temptations that he had, but he still believed.
Yeah. Let's talk about maybe one of those moments where he was sidetracked in Genesis chapter 12. All of those promises that God kept reiterating to him about a land that flowed with milk and honey, In Abraham's mind, he must be thinking, this is going to be the greatest place on planet Earth, and God is bringing me there, and I'm trusting him. But when he gets to the brink, when he gets to the promised land, there's a famine in the land. Doesn't that speak of the fact that our faith, like Abraham's faith, is going to be tested by God?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And how important is the fact that our faith has to be tested?
Mm-hmm. That means like you have an idea, an expectation of a land that flows with milk and honey, and then there's a famine. And, you know, a believer might say, okay, my life's going to be great now. And then he finds out that it really isn't. And that happens to people. Yeah. I remember pastoring in Hungary and being at the door greeting people, and this woman said, you know, ever since I became a believer, my life has fallen apart. You know, my husband left me, my daughter has cancer, I lost my job. And I said, well, congratulations. Like when you are serious with God, then sometimes that is like God saying to you, can you trust me?
Amen.
You know, can you trust me? Is trusting me like you cutting a deal with me, or am I God and I want to be God in your life? And,
yeah.
And so when Jesus was water baptized, he was led by God into the wilderness.
That's
and
right.
There he had a real trial for 40 days, mm-hmm. but that was the start of his public ministry. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when you come into the world of faith with God, you know, put your seatbelt on, because sometimes it means that you know, you're going to be blessed, and yet it's going to be a trial of your faith.
Yeah, which only serves to develop our faith as we keep trusting God and keep believing him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember vividly making a decision to go to Bible college and thinking, once I make that decision, surely the, you know, the heavens will open up and every need will be abundantly provided for. But when I found my way to Bible college, I could not find a place to live. I could not find a job, and the money was disappearing very quickly.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, and the car broke down. I remember that vividly. The car broke as well. So I thought to myself, now, wait a minute. Either I've stepped out of the will of God completely in my life, and all of this is coming against me, or I am in the perfect will of God for my life, and I must continue just to pursue and to trust him and to move forward and watch him provide in each of these areas. And of course, he did.
Mm.
He did. It was amazing. But as you said, that's par for the course, isn't
it? Yeah.
So buckling up is the right attitude.
So,
to have.
But Abraham, he didn't do that well in the trial, right?
No.
He left. He went to Egypt.
Yeah.
And like in a way, God could say to him, like, "What are you doing here? I called you to this land, and now you're here. So what happened?"
Well, it looks like he suffered, you know, it's kind of like a downward spiral, because that's what we read. He goes down into Egypt and suffers these great losses. You know, his faith is seeming, it's not lost in a complete sense, but with his faith having been abandoned temporarily, then he loses his courage and he almost loses his wife. And he ends up being rebuked by an unsaved king in Egypt. I mean, the whole scenario is like almost comical.
Yeah.
This is the father of our faith, you know, lying like Pinocchio. It's like, how can this happen? And yet God preserved him. God, you know, disciplined him.
Yeah.
But the most fascinating part of the story to me is that God brought him right back to the place where he got off track and essentially said, Let's do it again.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of Jonah, you know, where God got a hold of Jonah, but not until he reached the bottom of the bottom, the bottom of the sea, where the mountains begin to rise up from the bottom of the ocean, and then brought him back and said, and the word of the Lord came into Jonah the second time. I find that fascinating.
Yeah.
God being patient, gracious, and willing to give us another start, another do-over, if you will.
Now he comes back. So he that case where he was afraid of being killed by a king lies about his wife being his sister.
Yeah.
He goes down into Egypt, and then he does come back.
Yep.
And then he does it again with another king. Is that right?
Yeah, I think in the 20th chapter of Genesis, right?
Yeah, he does it. He does twice.
Yeah.
He says this. But why do you feel, why is he afraid? What do you think is behind the lying?
Maybe he feels isolated. Maybe he feels alone. Maybe he feels too small. Maybe, you know, he has to resort to try to preserve his life rather than say, God, you know, you called me.
Mm-hmm.
You initiated this in my life. I got to trust that those promises are greater than anything that I'll come up against in my life.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a challenge.
I think there's a whole landscape that needs to be drawn about the ancient world and like where, who he was and where he is and what's going on. Number one, he's not a native. He's not a Canaanite. He's not a, you know, a Philistine. He's not a Hittite. He's from far away. So he's different. That's like one thing.
Mm.
Number two, there are kings in the area and armies, and there are, you know, this is ancient world, but, you know, getting rid of a king, getting rid of a single guy, a man, like that, I don't know how often that happened, but it doesn't seem to me like it would be a, you know, he knew he could be eliminated.
Yeah.
I think he knew this. And I think it was in the world of bandits, a world of rogue armies or kings that are arrogant. Like he could fall into a difficult like situation. And when he says to his wife, you know, like tell them that I'm your brother, yeah, that I would not be killed. I think that has to be in the context of like something we're not familiar with that.
Yeah.
Like that, this is a guy that is in foreign territory, and he's actually walking around saying, "This is my land," in his heart.
Mm.
You know, I own this.
Mm.
God gave it to me. God brought me here to walk in the land. It says that
in
Genesis 13, to walk in the land in the length and the breadth and height of it, and that this was his. But if you were to tell the local king that this Bedouin traveler is like thinking that this is it, the king would say, you know, well, you know, I can eliminate him today. You know, he's not anything.
Mm.
He is not anything. And I think Abraham sometimes felt that.
Right.
I'm not anything. And so to tell his wife that I'm your brother, to save my life, like that's an indication of the idea of the fact that he does not feel empowered, protected. He does not feel, but the Lord is saying to him, I am your shield, you know, was it chapter 17, verse 1. You know, walk before me, be perfect. I am your shield, you know, I am your protector. But then on the other hand, he doesn't feel like that because in chapter 20, he lies again to another king. I believe it's a different king. About the same thing, telling his wife to say that I'm your brother.
Yeah.
That would mean that the woman is available, that the king could take her. And so Abraham is really he's really caving regarding his responsibility as a husband. You know, you can't touch my wife. This is my wife. You can't. If she's my sister, you can.
Mm-hmm.
But if she's my wife, you can't. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he's not doing well. In that way. And I think that is good for us to understand.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Because as you just described his experience, you're describing our experiences.
We go
through similar experiences where we make these terrible mistakes, even though we have heard from God. He's called us.
Yeah.
We have his promise. We're counting on that promise. And then when we're faced with a crisis or our faith is challenged, we can cave so quickly.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's obviously, like Elijah, a man of like passions, just as we are.
You know, how would it apply? I would say, you're getting your car fixed. You could lie somehow, or, you're selling your car and you could lie or misrepresent the thing. And the Lord is in heaven saying, come on, you're my child. Like, are you going to really behave like this when I am God and you are mine and I'm with you in life? And like, really, you're going to like save $100 or $1,000, or are you going to, be dishonest for the sake of this or that? You know, I really want you to walk before me.
Wow.
And not, be relating to the world in those terms, Right?
Incredible. Yeah. And as his story unfolds, along with his tent dwelling, which happened for like 100 years in his life, we see him start to build altars. It's almost as if along the way he starts to realize this is going to involve some self-sacrifice. And God has done that with us as well. At some point, some dear fragment of the self-life has got to be offered on the altar of sacrifice. He learned that. And it seemed like he learned it, because everywhere he went, we just keep reading about his story. He would build an altar. Yeah. God did something again in his life to remind him of how good God was and how faithful God was despite his flaws and his failures.
Yeah, yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, and he needed that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We do too. We need that altar in our lives.
Yes, yes.
Of course, the cross is what saves us, but along the way, we're also told to take up our cross, to deny ourselves.
Yes, yes.
And so we need that altar in our own lives personally.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Esau sold his birthright for a bowl of pottage. What a cheap deal, what a terrible loss. But that's like us. What Abraham was doing regarding his wife was such a cheap shot at protecting his life when God called him, sent him, and is with him, and like that wasn't needed. But you feel the fear, or you feel you try to work your thing, and you really come down to like a low level, and the Lord is like saying, wow, like you do not have a clue as to who I am and what I'm doing. But, there'll be a day when people will have Israeli passports. There'll be a Knesset, a parliament filled with Jewish politicians in Jerusalem 4,000 years from today, because I am with Abraham.
Wow.
And Abraham's like lying about his wife. What?
God is faithful. Messiah
is coming into the world.
Wow.
Through him, and he's coming in the clouds with the glory of God one day. And he stood before the Sanhedrin and said so the day of his crucifixion. How incredible this whole story is.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It's a fascinating story.
And Abraham doesn't know, because he's way back in history, and he's just struggling to like believe God.
And how about the promise of a child, a son, an heir, that would be
another good example.
Yeah, I mean, and Abraham is what? He's 90, and his wife is old. They're almost 100 years old.
Yes.
Where's God keeps saying the number of your descendants will be greater than the number of stars in the heavens and the sand on the seashore.
Yeah.
And I can imagine Abraham is like, well, could we start with one? Could we just have one?
But yet
that promise that God gave him did not come to pass until it was impossible for Abraham and Sarah to make it happen. I mean, isn't that just like God?
Mm-hmm.
Don't his promises find their fulfillment not in our strength or in our ability to help him out, but when we're as good as dead, then God does his best work.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Good. Yeah, it is.
And that's, you know, that he got that child. And I mean, even before the child of promise, Abraham heeded to Sarah, and she said, well, listen, it looks like you're not going to be able to have a child with me, so I recommend that you go into my handmaiden and have a child with her. Mm-hmm. Well, no argument from Abraham. It's like, okay, all right, fine. So along the way, we just see so many missteps, so many mistakes, so many obviously failures, and yet the promise of God remained and came to pass.
Yeah.
Even when we're faithless, God does remain faithful, doesn't he?
Yeah, and you know, Paul brought that out in Romans 4, and what a fundamental teaching that is, that it is all by grace, and your salvation, who's ever listening today, your salvation is based totally on the grace of God. We are unable completely to make our way to get to heaven. It has to be the work of Christ.
Mm. Wow. And Abraham's being declared righteous by God was without works, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was completely without works.
Yeah, there's no law present.
No law. It was before the law.
Yeah, before the law. Yeah.
So, you know, he did not have to be circumcised in order to be made righteous, because that wasn't given until after he believed God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
So
right.
No works justified before the giving of the law, and then without any human ability or strength, you can see, as you just said, that this is all the work of God. It's all the grace of God in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And last night, the illustration that you gave where, you know, talking about the handwriting of ordinances and the laws of God, and then putting, you know, imagine if the only thing that God did is drew a line through those laws that, okay.
Cancel it out.
I'll cancel that law. But then you took it off the screen and it was nothing.
Yeah.
And that is what the message was.
Yeah.
There is no sin.
Yeah.
There is nothing that reminds God of what we have done against him.
Yeah. It's in Colossians 2:15, he blotted out the handwriting of ordinances that were against us. And that word, it maybe you remember Pastor Stephen's teaching on it, exothelion, or I'm not sure exactly of the word. I need to look that up, but It's a total, you know, there's not even any trace.
Mm.
There isn't even the law itself in terms of it being used to condemn me isn't even there.
Mm.
It's like not only is there violation, but actually everything that could be used to condemn me is not there. It's been removed, blotted out. So that's a good message.
Mm. Amazing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You're made righteous, and not even, and then Hebrews 8, not remembering our sin. And you know, maybe you've seen that on the computer where you have the statement and then a line through it, you know, editing a piece of literature, you know, like the line that goes through it. I don't know if you've seen that, but you know, it's like the words are there, but then there's the line that goes through it. So you could read what was there.
Yes.
But in our case, there isn't any evidence anymore. It's over. It's good. There's no record.
Yeah.
There's no record. We're going to be in heaven with no record.
That's right.
We're going to be without spot, without blemish, without a record, accepted in the beloved, perfected, and actually the bride of Christ. Wow. How could Christ get married to somebody who had a past?
Mm.
You know, that could be recalled or, you know, a blemish. It's like there's not even any. We are righteous completely.
And that's how Abraham's life began. He believed God. and righteousness was placed on his account.
Yeah.
And that's the third thought with Abraham, is the tent, the altar, and then the promise, which was, unto thy seed, I'm going to give this land to you. So the separated life, the pilgrim's life, and that's what God, that's our designation. We're pilgrims and strangers and sojourners here in the earth. But that person's life, the believer's life, they feed. We feed on the promises of God.
Mm-hmm.
It's what, I mean, bread alone can't sustain us. We need every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And without it, there would be, you know, a famine in our souls. We'd perish without the word of God.
Yeah.
And those promises that God gives us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So vital for us.
Yes, exactly.
And then how about Abraham's relationship to others? Let's look at the story of Lot and Abraham. We know that they traveled together, but they reached a point in their relationship where there was a lot of contention between Abraham and his traveling group, whether they're family members and servants, and Lot's family members and his servants. It got so bad that Abraham said, we need to separate from each other physically. Mm-hmm. And I think he said that because perhaps he could see that if they didn't separate from each other physically, they might end up separating from each other in their hearts. So wise to do that so that there would not be a greater sense of separation.
Okay.
So they do. And he says to Lot, choose the parcel of land that you want. And Lot made that dreadful decision to lift up his eyes and look toward the well-watered plains of the Jordan and to the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, where he went. And then Abraham was alone. And he didn't even, I mean, it was his choice. Abraham should have had the first choice. He gave it to his nephew Lot. And then once separated from Lot, God spoke to him and said, lift up your eyes and look to the north, the east, the west, and the south. Everything, it's all yours. Amazing.
Yes.
And then when Lot goes to the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah and gets in all kinds of trouble, who rescues him?
Mm.
Abraham does.
Yeah.
I mean, his life and the way he related to others is even remarkable, in the sense that he didn't say, well, Lot, that's what you deserve. That's what you get when you walk by sight. You should have, should have used me as an example in your life. But he just, nope, he's in trouble. He's family. I'll rescue him.
Okay.
Fascinating.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is.
Everything about his life just tells us how important it is to just be a person of faith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have Abraham in the land. Lot doesn't really follow like Abraham, like he could have. And probably every night when they separated, every night Abraham would be thinking about his nephew.
Yeah.
And I wonder how he's doing. Mm. And must be, maybe he already knew it was not a good place. And but his nephew is there with his wife and the family, and Abraham was watching the whole thing happen. And then the God visited Abraham and told him, "I'm going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah." And Abraham immediately says, "Well, wait a minute. Can I talk to you about that? I'm going to intercede and pray." And probably Lot was in his mind.
Yeah, and then ultimately, when Lot was taken captive by an invasion of several kings, who rescued him? Abraham did.
Yeah.
So he was always seemingly there for him, you know?
Yes, right.
And maybe he knew when Lot made that dreadful decision, you know, Abraham was probably thinking, that's what I detached myself from. I'm not going back into it.
Yes.
This is a terrible decision. But he gave him, you know, the space to make that choice.
Yes, right.
Yeah. His story is just fascinating.
I mean, it is. Many parts to it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Well, just a couple of minutes left. Any final thoughts, Pastor, before we wrap up today's Grace Hour broadcast?
No, in Hebrews 6, it does say, just like you were saying, that we are followers of Abraham, who through faith and patience inherited the promises. So when we like learn these lessons and we realize that, wow, there are times when I also could withdraw, I could cave, compromise, and yet when I do that, God is still with me, corrects me, and teaches me. And then when Abraham does realize, like later in his life, and he tells his son, Isaac, like, this is a covenant. It's really happening. I see it in my life, and I want you to embrace it. Mm-hmm. Then Isaac has twins in his family, as Esau and Jacob. And he could tell Jacob, you know, your grandfather came here by faith, and this is what our family is believing. Mm-hmm. So Jacob is embracing the same promise and the same covenant, and he knows about it. And he though he has a lot of unbelief and he has a struggle with it, but behind, you know, underneath, kind of like underground water feeding us, like you might not realize it, but Jacob is really another example of like a believer that has his doubt, has questions about it, struggles in life, but he ultimately realizes, he knows, and he tells his sons, and he had 12 of them, he tells his sons that this is a covenant made with your grandfather and your great-grandfather, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and then his sons, you know, which are all like famous people, particularly Joseph. But they carried it with them. And then when Joseph is down in Egypt as a prince, yeah, he has this in his background, you know. So that is also part of our lives, too. Yeah. We pass it on.
Wow. It's that thread of redemption that we just see all the way through the Bible.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. And I guess it all starts with what we read in John's Gospel, chapter 8, verse 58. It's God, because before Abraham was, he said, I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one that we keep trusting in. And so there's lots of encouragement from his story for all believers and all of our listeners today, just to keep walking by faith, keep living by faith, keep trusting God. You'll have your rough moments. There'll be ups and downs and bends in the road, but, you know, just keep your eyes on Jesus, and he'll be faithful to carry you through.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much for joining us, friends. We appreciate it, and want to remind you that tomorrow will be the final Grace Hour broadcast this week on these redeemed lives, and they will be talking about Jacob coming up on the Friday edition of the Grace Hour, so be sure to tune in then. Until then, may God bless you.